Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, orchestrated by BASE. Today, I'm excited that Jeremiah Ouyang is here. Jeremiah, hello.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
So I've known Jeremiah for forever, pretty much. And what's really interesting is we're doing a podcast today, and that's how I first met him many moons ago. I think I was at Intuit in the time, So that's like 2008, 2009, 10.
We were just inventing podcasts then, weren't we?
It was the beginning. Yeah. So it was a great time. But Jeremiah has done a lot since then. He's an investor, advisor. He founded Catalyst Companies, which is an innovation council for large companies, really supporting the collaborative economy. He's been the founder of Collida Insights and other places. He worked in Forrester, and currently he's the CMO of Rally Network Association. Did I get that all right?
Thank you. Yes, that's a laundry list of things, you know, but the common theme, Scott, is I have a career mission. And my career mission is I love to help organizations connect to their customers with new technologies. And so whenever I see a new trend, whether it was Web 2, the sharing economy, or now Web 3, I run to that because I see that there's probably a breakage between a company and their customers, and I want to help solve that. So that's really like the thematic thread throughout my career.
Now that's great. You know, I was talking about podcasts with you before. You identified that as a trend. Now we're going to talk today about Web3 and a few other things. And just for the audience here, I want to be clear that, you know, Jeremiah knows B2B and B2C. We're going to focus a lot on B2C, but apply those learnings to B2B. So a great example is, you know, a lot of us are focused on retention and loyalty marketing, and there's so much you can learn from the B2C world. So tell us a little bit about Rally and your mission there.
Sure. So I'm CMO. It is a B2B2C offering. So we are catering to web and app developers, other companies who launch consumer apps. So I totally get the B2B, and I also delve deep into B2C. So we can talk about both. And essentially our products, which is our software development kits and software protocols, help web developers and app developers to launch Web3 features. So basically, we help apps to get into Web3.
Got it. So just kind of backing up for a second, just for the audience here, maybe just a quick overview of Web1, Web2, Web3, and maybe what Web4 will be.
Oh boy. So I don't have the answer for Web4, but some people actually skip that, but we'll just leave that alone, Jack Dorsey. Web one, and Scott, you might remember, being a seasoned, Silicon Valley entrepreneur and executive. In Web 1, if you had the technical skills, you could create your own web page, and anybody who was on the internet could read it. The ownership was centralized, and whoever managed that server, by the way, don't knock your coffee over because your server is probably under your desk. If you remember those days from a Dell Latitude, you would have power over that website. Big companies came out of that. Amazon, PayPal, eBay, Google, Yahoo, right? Intuit.
It's funny what you said about servers, because when I launched the Intuit community, it was actually with a server under my desk.
I think I quoted you in one of our Forrester research papers on that. I'm pretty sure. I remember I interviewed you on that type of topic. So that's Web 1. The power was centralized, frankly, and it was read only. Okay. Web 2, I think we all remember this, is when everybody had the opportunity to become their own media platform. Not only could we read the internet, we can now write. Of course, now looking back, I'm not sure if we wanted to see and read and see everybody's videos and pictures looking back, but here it is. It's democratized and the information is everywhere and everybody can create without having technical skills and without having to manage a server under their desk. Now, the difference is, governance and ownership and the financial upside are still centralized. Like, we thought it was going to be this panacea, this ultimate utopia where the people would have the power in a very democratic and social way. But in reality, it went back to a very traditional feudal system where there's some kings that, it's usually a guy, a white guy, that runs and manages those powerful platforms. And we saw this also in the sharing economy and ride sharing and home sharing and online credit card sharing. All of those things became very centralized. All right. So here we are, and we're in Web3. So the promise, because we're not there yet fully, is that not only can you read the internet, but you can also write and edit the internet. But the difference now is that the people should have the ability to govern. And also the people should have ability to edit the content and take ownership over their data and their identity. And they should also be able to vote on the direction of this new internet. And then lastly is to share in the financial upside. Now, I say the promise of it because I will fully acknowledge that this Web3 space has a significant amount of friction and challenges. If you open the newspaper or your Google News feed, you would read
what's
about
a newspaper?
It. Sorry, I'm dating myself. Pre-Web0. But there's the point being that there are certainly many challenges to overcome, just like Web1 did and Web2 did. And so I know that those will be top of mind as we approach Web3. No comments in Web4, by the way. Let's just leave that alone.
Okay. Well, you know, you're an innovator, so maybe you can help define whatever Web4 will be down the road. But kind of stepping back and looking at Web3, so maybe talk a little bit about how do you operationalize that? How are companies using Web3 today?
Sure. Let's just get down to some brass tacks on the technology. So Web3 is powered by a series of decentralized databases. It's that simple, where the databases are called blockchains, where they're all they're 99% of them are public. So everybody can see who has what or where is what information or where is which asset. And it's also difficult to change it without everybody knowing. That's called immutable, because it's everybody can see it and everybody has a copy of that. And this basically gives the power to those that are participating and creating on this new decentralized ledger called the blockchain. So in essence, it is designed, here's the insight, designed to spread the power and governance and ownership to those who are participating. So that's like the basics of the technology without getting too deep into it. The way you can operationalize it, let's talk about it from a user. And then secondly, as a business. So a user, you can acquire tokens. Those could be Ethereum or Bitcoin or an NFT, non-fungible token, which could be an image, a PDF, a video, could be any digital asset. And you can have ownership of that. And you can literally have ownership in that in your own digital wallet. These are called crypto wallets. And those wallets are on your phone or on your desktop or your browser extension. And you actually have ownership of that. By the way, the recent blow up of FTX, the users did not have ownership of their assets. They were in a central location. By the way, that's so Web2. And then they were double spending it and unaccounted for. So, that's like, what a big mess up. Like Web3 totally messed up, you know, not having that self-custody of your own assets. So that's how a user can do that. Now, secondly, a user, people, when they go to a Web3 website or a Web3 app, which are called decentralized apps, aka dApps. Yes, that's some jargon, but I'll unwind all the jargon for you today. You can connect your wallet just as you would like with Apple Pay at a retail store. You can connect your crypto wallet to those different Web3 apps. And then it will say, oh, hi, Scott. Welcome back. If you chose to share your name, by the way, you don't have to share your name. There's no requirement. That's one of the benefits of Web3. But it would say, oh, you've connected your wallet. We see inside of your wallet, Scott, which is public, that you own this token or this NFT, and that grants you access to a very special portion of our app or our website. So it's a way where you have control over your identity and those assets, and you can connect them to sites. So that's just one example. For businesses, we're seeing that big businesses are now moving into this space. Now, most of them are consumer. Let me just give a few examples and then we can break down the business models and even talk about loyalty, which you mentioned prior. So we heard that Starbucks is now going to be entering the Web3 space. And that's the big one. I mean, like if we're waiting for any company, they have the second most revenues on the App Store next to Apple Pay. And it's because people are using the Starbucks app to pay for their drinks. And there's a loyalty system already built in. And they've announced that they're going to enter the Web3 space and enable some of the loyalty points or maybe the collectible digital items to be available for their users, their customers, their fans to earn or buy and to hold. Secondly, we also heard last week, amidst the FTX blow up, that Nike is entering, yet again, by the way, they've been in the space for a while. So as Adidas and many other brands, they will be entering in with product innovation. So with Nike Swoosh, and essentially they will enable users to participate by altering digital shoes or creating digital shoes, virtual shoes. And then eventually those digital shoes will become NFTs, non-fungible tokens, that can be collected by other fans. Some of those virtual shoes will then become physical shoes made out of plastic and leather and rubber.
That was my next question.
Yeah. So IRL, just like Starbucks, will be IRL as well in store, right? And the Nike shoes will also, the royalties will be shared with the fans that actually created those virtual assets. So it's a way for co-innovation, which Intuit, as you know, was very early on in doing that. And then also sharing the financial upsides. That's the real important thing with Web3, is that marketers share in the governance and the financial upsides with their fan base. That is the big change. And so I hope those two examples brings to light what is coming from the Fortune 10.
Yeah, no, they really help out a lot. And the co-innovation part, I think that's, you know, in the B2B space, we're wrestling with that a little bit, I think. You know, he mentioned Intuit in these discussions, but I was so influenced by it. And Scott Cook was so big on customer-driven innovation and co-innovation. And now it's really great to see this new way of handling that. And I'm excited about Starbucks. I stopped drinking Starbucks, but now I still go to the store just so I can use the app.
Wow.
Because there's so much you can learn by using the app. And, you know, like you, I'm trying to be a student of all these new technologies, et cetera. Okay. So now I'm in the B2B space.
Yep.
I have loyal customers. I'm building an advocacy program. How should I think about Web3?
Mm-hmm. So in the B2B space, and I was fortunate to attend some sessions in Santa Clara at the Blockchain Expo, which was very B2B focused. And they had presenters from SAP, IBM, Hyperledger, Mozilla, and also there were some pharma companies and supply chain companies there. So quite B2B in addition to traditional finance companies. Now, the most common use case that we see right now in the B2B space is typically around value chain management and supply chain management using some of the blockchains. I am not as familiar with that space, but I do know from listening to the speakers that there's examples where pharma companies are trying to figure out how to create a medical record system that is owned by the patients, where they have management and control and governance over their identity. And from there, the patients can choose which information to share. And then the data is in one location for the patient. Right now, if you switch providers, you have to you have to get your files sent, medical records sent over, which is a major issue. And then you have to make sure that the information is deduped. I mean, we're talking about your life here. We're talking about your health and making sure you get the right meds. Like, it's a very serious issue. And there's multiple copies of your medical records and they are probably not congruent. So what's up?
I was going to say, I don't know if you can relate to this. I've moved companies a few times. Uh-huh. And every time I move companies, it's a hassle because to have your medical records moved from point A to point B to point, you know, company A. You know, different providers for each company. So totally on board with what they're doing.
Yes. So in a Web3 world, you, Scott, should have ownership over your medical records. And then with a few clicks, you could choose which portion of those medical records from a centralized, your data should be shared and for how long and who should see it. So it's a very different way of approaching it versus the medical records are owned by the providers. It should be owned by the patient. So that's one example. The other example that we heard about is the diamond industry. And this could also be a luxury purses. This could be car parts. This could be electronic parts. Want to know where all the assets are along the value chain, from getting them out of mines or rare earth materials to diamonds. And are they being shipped? Are they going into manufacturing or processing? Are they in storage? Where are they? Who has it? They don't always know. So using a decentralized database, aka a blockchain, where everybody who's allowed to can see where is that asset, who has it, who has touched it last. And that is a way to organize the value chain to ensure that you know where all those assets are. Of course, there are some hurdles to overcome. You have to make sure that the right product is tied to that blockchain record, and people are working on ways to ensure that there is congruency there. So those are the examples that I hear about the most in the B2B space. I've definitely heard of some B2B marketing tactics, for example, SAP. I have some friends over there, and they did a proof of attendance NFT for their actual conference, physical conference in the software space, B2B, right, for businesses. So if you attended the event, you could then mint, that's the term for collecting, an NFT that shows you were at that event. And they were one of the first B2B companies, SAP, to do that. So that's an example. Other examples, Adobe has moved into the space with creators. And also Salesforce has a Web3 division, and they've announced that they might have like an NFT cloud, which will be for the business side. So you can see very quickly that the enterprise software space is moving into Web3, just like they moved into Web2, by the way.
Yeah.
Last point on this is I remember when Facebook started to become quite important in the world, Mark Benioff penned a post in TechCrunch as an op-ed that said the Facebook imperative. A few months later, they announced Chatter, and then a little bit after that, they acquired Slack. So that lineage from consumer Web2 to enterprise Web2 is going to repeat here in Web3.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think the whole the opportunity, well, first of all, around Starbucks, going back to that, is what I'm really interested in is it's a company, yet it's taking part of, you know, its operations and decentralizing it. And I think a lot of B2Bs are afraid that they have to decentralize everything, right? But you know, you can do pieces of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. So Scott, you remember in Web2, many companies were afraid of that, right? They didn't want to open the doors for people to see what's behind the scenes. They didn't want employees to rate the employer on Glassdoor. They didn't want customers to share price lists. That happened to me when I was running social at Hitachi Data Systems, by the way. And by the way, the price lists were different. That was really concerning, right? So big companies were afraid of transparency. But when big companies adopted social media, they gained trust, like United had to do. Remember? Like Dell had to do. Back going way back to the early
Web guitar.
I'll say, you know. See, you're an OG Web2 person. So when it seems scary, if you leaned in, you gained trust. So why would a traditional B2B enterprise company decentralize in Web3? So I'm going to provide a little story here. Let's go back to the ancient empires. I'm talking 2,000 years ago. The ancient empires, the realm, the empire wasn't the borders. It was actually where the coin was. And so the Romans knew that. The ancient Greeks knew that. So wherever their printed fiat coin was, that was actually the breadth and the width of their empire, because that's where commerce was, and they became this trusted source. Obviously, the United States knows this as well, and so does China, and the euro, right? This is how far your empire goes, is where is your coinage? So B2B marketers, why would you join Web3? Well, if your entire ecosystem, including your competitors potentially, are all using your blockchain and they're using your tokens, that's the reach of your market. So instead, you could stay centralized and closed. But if you want to do ecosystem growth, then you need to go where the network is. And the network is going to the blockchain. I hope that's helpful. And it's a little esoteric, but it's a, I think it's an apt metaphor.
No, I like it a lot. Definitely helpful. So, you know, here I am day one thinking about, you know, Web3, what's the first thing I should do, or what, how should I approach it?
Yeah. So, first you need to get educated, and, this is a very challenging market. So Web2, it was very intuitive and pretty easy to get up to speed. It took maybe a couple weeks at most, maybe a couple months. The sharing economy was very intuitive because it was off the back. So Web2 was very simple. Web3, it took me 6 months to understand the space deeply before I could be an advisor to some of these projects. And now I'm a full-time CMO in the space. It is a really steep learning curve. So get out there and watch YouTube videos, read books on the topic, attend workshops, listen to podcasts on those topics, and read the news on what's happening. Because there's quite a bit.
What do you recommend?
So the popular news within Web3 would be CoinDesk. That is one. Cointelegraph is another. Excuse me. There's a number of podcasts. A16Z, which is one of the top investors, has multiple podcasts on the topic, interviewing the top entrepreneurs in the space. And there's countless YouTube videos. Oh, and to be specific, I'm not recommending you consume the content that is very speculative in nature, like buy this token, buy this token. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about blockchain 101. How does it work? Very business focused. And, you know, what is the upside for marketers?
Great. So I'm trying to create a virtual campus, the CLG campus, and I have a bunch of students attending it. There's lots of resources. I mean, in some ways it's, you know, resources that are, we're aggregating from around the internet, and we have the campus where practitioners are teaching, and there's a community aspect. I'm taking a moment here to pick your brain. Any advice about Web3 and creating a virtual campus?
Yes. So, if you're asking me about the curriculum, I mean, yes, you need to educate them on Web3 for sure. So that's a baseline given. But if you wanted to make the campus Web3 driven, you could. So here's what a Web3 campus would look like, a virtual campus. First of all, you reward those that are providing value. And so you might launch your own coin or have certain types of NFTs that are available for the teachers and those that also recruit students as well. And so as they provide value, they could earn these coins as a form of contribution and potentially even a form of revenue in a way where there's value that's being shared to those that are providing value. Secondly, as the students, they're participating, if they attend some classes and perhaps they take a quiz to prove they have the knowledge after taking the course, they could earn an NFT, which is a form of a diploma in a way, right? It shows the certification that you have attended and you have a certain level degree of mastery. You could also have students earn tokens by creating content, editing content, or attracting other students. And they in turn could use those tokens to pay for future classes or to attend advanced workshops with speakers. So essentially, you could create your entire economy for this online campus and academy with your own blockchain technologies. And it would be a way to share the ownership and different things. You could also, the students who attend the most classes, or actually any student who attends classes, they're earning tokens or NFTs. They could also vote on what should be the future curriculum. And those who have attended the most classes might have earned more tokens because they're more engaged, and it could provide them with more weight. Or you could say, no, there's no weighting at all. And you could just make it, you know, a direct democracy. There's many ways you can do it. So essentially, it's getting people more engaged because they can govern, they can earn, they can share in the financial upside of the academy. What do you think, Scott?
I love it. I love the ideas. Yeah, no, I mean, you know me, we were using a term when I first met you, user contribution system. So I've been embracing user created content and this open source approach for a long time.
For sure. I mean, and if you listen to Jack Dorsey's comments, he actually believes that this is the way Twitter should have been created in the first place. It should have been more like a protocol rather than a platform, but the technology wasn't there at the time. Right.
And there's more to read about now.
I mean, even going back to like the Intuit communities, like the innovation communities, like you could add these Web3 components to it, right? You can, I know your gears are turning. You could see how you could, if you went back to that rule, you know exactly how you can use this.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. Is there anything I haven't asked you today that you're like, damn, Wilder, why didn't you bring that up?
I think we went through all of it. I think the big thing to I want people to hear about is it's important that we separate. There's two components of the Web3 space. And the first component, which is getting the mass majority of media attention, is the speculative side, which is the financial side, financial upsides, and basically, which appears to be scams and people, what's called rug pulling, pulling the rug from underneath people and taking people's money, basically greed. And I will acknowledge that does exist, but it's getting an excessive amount of attention. On the same side of the industry, but it's different, the second side is the utility aspect. And a majority of my comments today have been focused on that side. And I talked about the big brands that are coming into the space. Yes, they do care about revenues and top line growth. I get that. But they can generate money in other ways. That's not the primary reason they're here. They're here because they want to have a deeper engagement for co-innovation, for loyalty. They want their customers to feel like they own a piece of the brand and contribute towards it. It's a very different aspect of the industry that is not well covered in the media. So for those that are listening, and I know many marketers are listening, please make sure you separate the noise from the speculative side versus the brands are moving into the space with utility. And it's a clear difference that I see. And I'm focused on the second side.
Yeah, no, really, really good point. I think for folks listening, you know, a lot of them are focused on loyalty, advocacy, retention, growth, expansion. And so this is a trend that, you know, all of us need to be aware of and then figure out if we're going to embrace it. One last question I like to ask everybody is, so who or what has influenced you the most in terms of your professional career?
I don't have any one individual that has been the one person. Many people have helped me, many of my business partners, many people who have hired me, some people who've, you know, taught me painful lessons as well that I've learned from them. And once I understand, like, where is the lesson in that? And I would say that the area that I'm focusing on now in my growth for personal and career is on Stoic wisdom, you know, the ancient thinkers on understanding how little control we have over life, just the way that we react to things, especially in the very tumultuous world and economy that we live in now, and in climate change and inflation and job loss. You know, I see those things happening. But the ancient Stoics just teach us to stay focused on the things that we can control, and understanding that the obstacles that are coming towards all of us, and I know many marketers feel concerned because we're often the first to be cut, that we can just do our best and stay grounded.
Awesome. Very powerful words. A great way to end here. So Jeremiah, thank you for joining me today and joining everybody. This has been great. So thanks everybody for joining Customer-Led Groove. And you can find us on the CLG campus, Amazon, even Alexa, Apple. And most people say at the end of this, like us. I'm not going to say that. What I always say is listen to this and then play it forward and share what you've learned.
Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.